Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's show is Bechoros Daf Yud Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins on Daf Yud Zayin, on the second of the wide lines. Before beginning the shiur, we will glance at the nosei, the topic heading that appears in the outside margin of our daf. In the Shas Ozer, the cornerstone of the Gemara marking system, you will find, namely on the daf that appears on your screen, which is the Shas Ozer, topic headings and structural notes. Topic headings entitled nosei and structural notes entitled mivneh. These are appearing from time to time when needed. In this case, our topic heading reads, Mokor Be'inyan Nidme. A Taneg source will be featured in the Gemara dealing with something called a Nidme. That's an offspring of an animal that is, when born, does not resemble the parent. And in the source it will say, Rabbi Meir Mechayev V'Chachomim Poitrim. The Gemara will be investigating what does this refer to. All that we see in the source is that Rabbi Meir says it's bound, it's obligated, and the Chachamim say there is exemption. But with regard to what? In the Gemara itself, you will notice then a series of double underlines. The double underline is one of our series markings. In this case, under our Mivneh heading, the structural note, we feature a double underline, and we've written Shlavim, stages, Levarer, to investigate or clarify, Legabi Ezo Halacha Cholkim, regarding what area of law are Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in disagreement. So now we turn to the Gemara, the second wide line, Rochel bas Eiz, ve'Eiz bas Rochel. Rochel is a sheep, the daughter of a goat, which means a goat bore a sheep-looking offspring, or an Eiz bas Rochel, the goat, the offspring of a Rochel, which would mean the goat it doesn't resemble its mother, that is a sheep. Rabbi Meir Mechayev HaChachomim Potrin. Rabbi Meir says there is obligation, and the Chachomim say there is exemption. Omar Le Rav Hoshaya L'Rabo. Rav Hoshaya said to Rabo, Ki Ailis L'Kamei D'Rav Huna, when you go up to Rav Huna, Bo'i Minei, ask of him the following, Rabbi Meir Mechayev Lemai. This quote from the source where it says Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that there is obligation. Well, with regard to what? Ilema lebechoro. If it is to suggest that a firstborn nidme offspring, for example, a sheep bore its first male offspring, first child, was a male goat-looking offspring, and that would be obligated in the mitzvah of Bechora. In other words, you would have to give that to a Kohen who would subsequently bring it to the Beis HaMikdash as a sacrifice. Well, that can't be. Does Veleslei the Rebbe Meir Ach Bechor Shor? Does Rebbe Meir not hold from the drosha on this pasuk that says Ach Bechor Shor, which we learn as meaning Ad Shehu Shor U'Bechoro Shor? Until when is there the mitzvah of Bechor? When the offspring resembles the parent. Therefore, to suggest that Rabbi Meir Mechayev, in the case of Nidme, is a reference to the obligation of Bechora, that is not likely. Elo, well, possibly L'Reishis Hagez. This is another mitzvah. Maybe his obligation is with regard to the mitzvah of the shearings. Namely, when a sheep is shorn, so it's a certain quantity of shearings, which is featured extensively in Maseches Chulin, is given to a Kohen. So maybe this halacha of Rabbi Meir Mechayev is with regard to Reishis Hagez. that the offspring, when shorn, even though it doesn't resemble its parent, will be obligated in this mitzvah. The Gemara says, not so. Velesle ha detona debe Rabbi Shmuel. Does Rabbi Meir not hold from the following teaching? Kvasim shitzimron kosher, sheep whose wool is coarse, is hard, pturin reishis hagez, are exempt from reishis hagez, shenemar, umigez kivsai ischamein. This pasuk indicates that gez is a shearings that will produce warmth, and only a material like wool, a soft wool material, will achieve that. Therefore, a goat that's the daughter, that's the offspring of a sheep, that indicates that the goat has goat-like hair, a coarser material, so it wouldn't be a candidate for rachis hagez. So what does Rabbi Meir Mechayev mean that Rabbi Meir does obligate? Well, with regard to what? Omar Lay. So Rabbah says, Nechsi Anan. Let us evaluate it. Hocha b'mai askinon. What is this Tanaic source talking about in which Rabbi Meir said one is chayev? Baruchel Shiyolda Min Eiz V'oviv Tayish. There is a set of parents here, a rochel, a sheep, that became impregnated through a tayish, a goat. So you have sheep and goat getting together, producing a goat-looking offspring. U'b'choshishin l'zera ho'av l'inyin oisoy v'esbenoy komifligi. And the mitzvah that we're focusing on now, not Bechora, not Reishis Hagez, but Oisoi Vespino. And the issue of Oisoi Vespino, first of all, that halacha means that one is not allowed to slaughter the a parent and offspring animal on the same day. In this particular case, the issue concerns the slaughtering of the father and offspring creature. When a combining of sheep and goat takes place, do we take into consideration the identity of the father, and in this particular case, the offspring and father resemble each other, and if you take into consideration the father, so then you would be in violation of Oisei Vespino. That's what we mean here by Choshishin Lazarav, that means to take into consideration the father's identity with regard to the offspring, with ramifications, once again, to this particular halacha of prohibition of slaughtering offspring and parent on the same day. The Rabbi Meir Savar, Choshishin Lazera Av, Rabbi Meir holds that you do take into consideration the father's identity, and hence the offspring, which happens to look like a goat, matches the father, who is a goat. And therefore it would be forbidden to slaughter the two on the same day. V'Rabbanon Savri, the Rabbanon who say there is exemption, they hold Ein Choshishin Lazera Av. The presence of the father is simply discounted, and therefore you evaluate the relationship here between mother and offspring. And in this case, mother is of one variety; she's a sheep, and the offspring looks like something else, and hence there isn't a prohibition of Oisov Espino. The Gemara asks if this really is the machlokes. Namely, a machlokas concerning Oisov Espino, then Ihachi Liflegu Bechoshishin Lazerav Bialma. Let us restate the problem here. If the machlokas between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Meir is in this topic of Oisov Espino, and the controversy revolving around Choshishin Lazerav, so then why not just say it very simply that the machlokas is regarding Choshishin Lazerav, the Plukta de Chananya v'Rabbonon, as these two Tanaic authorities disagree. Chananya and the Rabbonon disagree in general. Even if you have a regular like parent combination, two sheep, let's say, get together and produce an offspring looking like a sheep. And the issue is, does the mitzvah of Osov Espino mean not only shechting mother and offspring on the same day would certainly be prohibited, but does that include father and offspring on the same day? That itself is an issue of choshishin lezerahav. Do we take into consideration the father's representation, so to speak, in the offspring, and thereby saying that father and offspring is also prohibited? That once again, if the machlokis Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim revolves around the issue of choshishin lezerahav, you don't have to get into a strange case like this of the nidmeh. You can have two like parents, and still the machlokis would be relevant. Ella, the Gemara goes on, Ella, le'olam le'bechora. Now, we go back to basically the first suggestion here, that the machlokis between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim in the issue here of Nidmeh concerns the mitzvah of Bechora. The Hocha b'mayaskinan, this case of the machlokis, Rabbi Meir and Chachomim, is dealing with what? And you'll notice in the markings that we have little numbers that start to appear here. These will be different approaches within the issue of Bechora. So that we have one, and then two lines later you see Eboy Esemo, a squiggle underline, that's number two. And then Rav Ashi represents number three. So we're going to now have our mindset focused on the issue of firstborn. The Hocha b'mayaskin, and here in the Machlokis between Rabbi Meir and the Chumim in the Braisa, the case is as follows. Rochel bas Eiz. So that if you were looking at this generationally, you have the first generation is an Eiz. And following the Eiz is a goat. Following the goat, you have a Rochel. And that's the second generation, so that an Eiz gave birth to, a goat gave birth to a sheep-looking creature, and the sheep-looking creature gave birth, once again, to a Rochel, to something that resembled itself. But it didn't resemble the grandmother. The issue then is, if this third generation, what we call Rochel, happens to be a firstborn male offspring, will it be chayav in Bechora? So mor sover zil basar ime, look at it with respect to its immediate predecessor, its mother. V'hai lav nidmehu, it's not a nidmeh, it's not something that doesn't look like the parent, it looks like the parent, therefore it will be chayav in Bechora. Umor sovar, the Chachamim who say there's exemption, they say zil boser imei de'imei. You look at the previous generation, in other words, two generations above, and this grandchild, relative to the grandmother, is a nidmeh, because the grandchild is a sheep-looking creature, and the grandmother was a goat. And as a result of its not looking like the first generation, it's not going to be bound to the mitzvah of Bechor. The Eboy Esemo, another approach, is Berochel, dealing here with a different scenario. It's a Rochel whose predecessor was an Eiz, Bas Eiz, whose predecessor was a Rochel. So we have a sandwich situation. The first generation in this case was a real sheep. Now the real sheep gave birth to a Nidmeh, a goat-looking offspring, and that, in turn, gave birth to a Rochel-looking, a sheep-looking offspring. And it's regarding this case, says the Gemara in the second approach, that the Machlokis Rab Meir and the Rabbonon apply. Mor Sovar Chozra Seyus Limekomon. We'll call this, seus is from the word se, and we can call it sheephood. Sheephood is reinstated. And therefore, this third-generation sheep-looking creature is simply a reinstating of the original real sheep grandmother. And therefore, this is not a nidme. It looks like what it really comes from, namely the original generation. Umor sovar, the Chachomim will hold, the Chachomim who say there's exemption, say, lo chazra seus l'makomon. They don't hold from this reinstating of original pure sheep status. The Rashi adds a very nice point regarding text. Don't forget, we're analyzing a brisa, and the Rashi says, V'ibo yisema b'rochel bas eiz bas rochel v'chado kotoni. The original brisa, which appeared on the third wide line of the Gemara, is not describing two different cases. Albeit in our original marking of the brisa, it seemed that it was. We had a little comma after the third word in that Tanaic source that you see on the third wide line. But at this point, the Gemara is saying there shouldn't even be a comma there. And rather, if there's one case, Berochel bas eiz, v'oisa eiz hoisa bas rochel. So if you read it like that, we're describing one case. Of one case involving three generations. And hence the Gemara suggests that this is the subject of the Machlokis in case, according to answer number two. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Ashi Omar, the case of the Eiz Bas Rochel, Kegoin Shiesh Boi Miktsas Simonim. This goat, firstborn male goat coming from a sheep, is, of course, it's a nidme, but it has some characteristics that make it resemble the mother. That's called miktsas simonim. If it has some characteristics, is that enough to make it like the mother, and hence be chayev in bechora? Or do you need to have more than just some signs? Uman Chachomim, who is the Chachomim in the source that says there's exemption? Rabbi Shimon. It is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon that deals with this kind of case, and who says, Ad she roshe v'rubo doimelimo. There is no b'chor obligation unless the head and most of the body looks like the mother. So miksa simonim, meaning just partial, namely less, a minority of signs that cause resemblance, that will not be enough to make it obligated in Bechorah, and hence the Rabbanan hold there is exemption. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir says miksas simonim is enough, and that's why there is Bechor obligation. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new topic heading. On the outside margin, we read, Dvorim shenishtanu misheshes yemei breishis. Nishtanu dinam. Items that are, we'll call them variations, or they have, we'll call it differences from what the pure variety of item is. That's the idea of nishtanu. They changed. They changed from the way they were created. In the course of time, we can call them mutations. Are they, do they have the halacha concerning the original? Of course, we're speaking a bit in an abstract form. We'll have to see through the Gemara what we are referring to. We have some structural notes to tend to. You'll notice as the Gemara unfolds, there are diamonds. And the Mivne note on the side of the Gemara indicates the diamond features either the word Moide or Hakol Moidim. In other words, there is agreement. Dvorim Shiesh Hakpodo Shelo Yehe Bom Shinui. There's agreement where Rabbi Meir, for example, who was willing to say or was of the opinion that in the case of a Nidme, there was obligation. In these cases, there will be agreement that there that nidme-type things or mutation-type things will not be included in the original halacha of whatever, as we will see in the Gemara. So we now turn to the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Moide Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir will concede the Soyer Shel Rosh Chodesh Deboinon Ben Seira. With regard to the sacrifice that's brought on Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of a month, a special sacrifice is brought, a goat offering. That Soyer, that goat offering, must be an offspring from a pure line of goats. In other words, if you were to look at the sugya just before, and we saw Rabbi Meir holding that a Rochel ben Eiz bas Rochel would have been obligated in Bechora, not so in the case, in a parallel case concerning the sacrifice of Rosh Chodesh. Because there is, you are lacking a straight line of pure goats all the way back to the beginning. And the Gemara asks, my time, why is there this strictness on the part of Rabbi Meir? In other words, this limitation to a pure lineage of goats, all looking like goats. Omar Kra. Well, there is a pasuk that says, and the pasuk is from Bamidbar, Perek Chavches, pasuk Tesvav. This may be familiar to many of you. The pasuk says, and we've included this on the side. It says, "Usir izim echad lechatos l'Hashem al oilas hatamid yaseh veniskoi." The Gemara darshins the pasuk Omar Kra Echad. The pasuk gets it, "Usir izim echad," which means "Hamiyuchad ubo misheshes yemei breishes," the special one, the pure one that is pure way back, all the way back to creation. The Gemara asks, "The ha mehocha nafka, is the point of purity learned from here? Mehasam nafka, there is an alternative source for that, or another source for that, a different source." The pasuk says, "Shor oy kesev, prat likilayim, oy eiz." Prat l'nidme. So we have this phrase from the pasuk in Vayikra, Perikov Beis, that says oyez to the exclusion of a nidme. So from that pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, I would learn that a nidme, a non-pure looking animal, would be unfit as the sacrifice. So the Gemara answers, Tzricha, I need both sources. De'i mehasam, had I had just the Vayikra pasuk, have amina. Hani mili, I would have thought, when is it that nidme is unfit, is posel? Hecha delo nochas ledori. That's when you don't get involved with extra generations. What do we mean by that? We mean that from the mother's standpoint, you have a mother that gave birth to something that does not look like itself. Aval hecha de nochas ledori. However, in a situation that you get involved with generations, for example, that something is born that actually looks like its mother, but it doesn't look like its grandmother, so that only relative to the aim emo would it be a nidme. So I would have thought that in a case like that, it is acceptable as a sacrifice, because as far as its own immediate mother is concerned, it looks like its mother. Therefore, I can't rely on the pasuk in Vayikra alone. V'i mehasam, had I had the pasuk in Bamidbar dealing with Rosh Chodesh, havamina hani mili ligabi korban choiva, I would have thought that when is it that a nidme is unfit? That's when you're dealing with an obligatory type sacrifice. Aval nidava, lo, but something of a voluntary nature, we wouldn't have this restriction. Tzricha, therefore I need the pasuk in Vayikra, which includes also voluntary type sacrifices. Omer of Acho Bar Yaakov. Hakol Modim, another example of unanimity. The Ein Loikin Al Simroi Mishum Kilayim. Kilayim, or better known in the case of clothing, Shatnez, is a Torah prohibition of having wool and linen woven together forming a garment. That's when we speak about wool and linen, but the shearings from a sheep that is not a pure lineage sheep, that is that kind of wool, being that it comes from an animal that's not a pure lineage sheep, will not result in the kilayim or the shatnez prohibition, as the Gemara proves. Shenemar loisilbash shatnez tsemer upishtim. These words are essential to have inserted in the Gemara. The pasuk warns against the wearing of shatnez, which is the mixing of tsemer upishtim, wool, tsemer, and pishtim, linen. Ma pishton shelo nishtana, just like pishton is something that doesn't undergo change. It's a plant, the flax plant. Af tsemer shelo nishtana. So too, the wool that's featured in the shatnez prohibition taught together with pishton must have the same characteristic, that it has not gone through any change. You'll notice the double underlining of the expression ma pishton. This has relevance to the upcoming Gemara, and it will be very helpful to have this marked off when we study the Rashi on this sugya. Oma Rav Popa, Hakol Moidim Shitzimroi Posel Letreles. There is unanimity regarding the wool of a nidme as being unfit for the making of tzitzis. Tcheles is a term used often in the Shas as a reference to tzitzis. Shenemar lo yisulba shatnez gedilim ta'ase lecha. Gedilim is a reference to tzitzis. And in this pasuk, we see tzitzis are positioned next to the prohibition of shatnez. And we know from shatnez that shatnez is in effect the tzemer upishtim, which we saw is part of this pasuk. Just the Gemara quoted this pasuk in an abbreviated fashion, and we learn from here ma pishton shelo nishtana, just like pishton is something that is a constant growth without changes. Af tzemer shelo nishtana. So too, the tzemer that is fit for tzitzis would have to be a tzemer that has not undergone any change, and hence it would not be acceptable if it were the wool of a nidme. Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok hakol moidim shein tzimroi mitame b'negoyim. We didn't mention before, but you'll notice these triangles all are highlighting the tzimro shel nidme. We have all of these halachas from the that have in common, all of these different opinions have in common the focusing on the wool of the nidme. So this last point of Rav Nachman Yitzchok was everyone agrees that the tzemer of a nidme is not subject to the phenomenon of negoyim. Negoyim is a general realm, sometimes referred to as tzoras, which has, when it appears, it causes ritual impurity. Many of you are familiar, possibly, with people that become mitzoroyim, or they are afflicted with tzoras. Houses can be afflicted with tzoras, and clothing can be affected with tzoras, and certain types of, we'll call threads, can become affected by tzoras. So the Gemara here is saying that being that tzemer is something that is subject to negoyim, however, if it's a garment made of nidme tzemer, it won't be subject to negoyim. And this is learned from the following. Shinemar, the pasuk in the context of negoyim says, negoyim once again is a reference to tzoras, or this discoloration that renders the item tome. The pasuk says in the context of negoyim, beveged tzemer oy beveged pishtim. And once again, you see the positioning of tzemer next to pishtim. Ma pishtim, just like flax, is something that doesn't go through change. Shelo nishtane. Af tzemer, shelo nishtane. So too, the tzemer that would be subject to negoyim must be a tzemer that is not from a nidme, because that would represent a mutation, something that's gone through change. Omar Rav Ashi, af onu nomar. Let we also want to say, Hidla Hagefen Algabi Te'ena. We should point out that Rav Ashi is not going to deal with the issue of wool, but he goes back to the issue of items that have not undergone any change. So Rav Ashi will be dealing with a different topic, and this will be explained in the Gemara. Hidla ha-gefen al gabi te'ena. Gefen is a vine from which grapes grow, which eventually are processed into wine. The grapevine is a type of plant that will crawl on the ground, will extend as a low type plant with its branch work continuing on the ground, unless it is supported by poles or trellises. In this case, a fig tree is going to fulfill that role. So he supported the gefen, the vine, on a fig tree. Yenoi posul l'nesachim. The wine produced from those grapes will not be acceptable for the wine offering on the mizbeach, known as nesachim. My time off. Why is that the case? Well, zevach u'nesachim. The pasuk juxtaposes nesachim with zevach. Ma zevach shaloi nishtane. Just like a zevach is something that has not gone through change, meaning we know that a korban is not acceptable if it's a nidme. We saw references to this earlier in today's shiur. For example, we had a pasuk that said oi eis, and we said prat le nidme. So in this pasuk, a reference to a sacrifice is made, and hence zevach, just like zevach nidme would be unfit. Nesachim af nesachim shelo nishtanu. So too, nesachim namely wine that has not undergone any change. And the problem with grapes that are supported on a fig tree, that is considered something that has been subjected to a change. You may ask, what change has this wine undergone? Well, later in the Gemara, we will see that this wine has, as a result of its being produced from grapes supported on a fig tree, will have a changed scent. In other words, a wine has a certain aroma to it, and this aroma, the aroma coming from a grapevine supported on a fig tree, there will be a difference from regular grapes that are supported on mere poles. Continuing in the Gemara, Maskif lo Ravina. Ravina raises a question on Rav Ashi's approach. He also deals with a case of hidla. Here it says, hidla pishton al-gabi hege. We're not dealing with wine, but we are dealing with the idea of supporting one variety of plant on another variety of plant. Here, he supported a pishton plant on a hege, a type of bush, another type of plant. So it's there's a parallel over here between supporting a gefen on a te'ena, supporting a vine on a fig tree. Here, we'll talk about supporting the pishtan plant on a hege. Are you going to say, Ravina asks Rav Ashi, hachinami delishtani, that there is change? That the pishtan, by being supported on a different type of plant, experiences change? Im Kain, if that would be the case, that Pishtan does go through change, then Loi Motzis Amris, you will not have been able to say, as we have been saying time and time again, Ma Pishtan Shelo Nishtana. Referring in the to our Gemara above with the markings, all of the double underlined sections with dots in it were halachas from which we were proving from the nature of Pishtan as something that doesn't go through change. But if you say that Hidlo Pishtan al Gabi Hege is something that does go through change, and Ravino is developing this argument after Rav Ashi said that Hidlo Geffen Alteino does constitute change, so then we won't be able to argue as we have been arguing till now, Ma Pishtan Shelo Nishtane, because the Ha Pishtanami Mishtani, Pishtan is also something that does experience change. So what Ravina is doing, and this is emphasized in the Shita Mekubetzes Ois Zayin, it says, well, if you follow your line of reasoning, then all of the teachings above, those of Rav Acha and of Rav Popa, will all of those conclusions will have to be brought into question, or are undone or challenged, because their arguments, Rav Popa's argument, or Rav Popa's case and Rav Acha Bar Yankiv's case, were based on the concept of Ma Pishtan Shelo Nishtane. But by following Rav Ashi's approach, that by supporting variety 1 on variety 2, you activate change, so then Pishtan, by being supported on a different variety of plant, would also experience change, and hence, as was argued above, that Pishtan doesn't go through change, that simply won't be the case. Amale, Rav Ashi says, don't worry, we can keep our whole approach before. When we speak about change, or especially when I spoke about change, in the case of the Hidlo Geffen Agabi Teino, Ze Nishtane Rechoy, there was an aromatic change in the wine as a result of it being supported on the fig tree. However, Ze, the case of the Pishtan on the Hege, Lo Nishtane Rechoy, there is no aromatic change, so that as far as the standard constituting change, that does not apply to the Pishtan. Hence, we can argue, as we did before, Pishtan is something that doesn't experience change. Continuing now with the Mishnah. This Mishnah will feature cases where there is a doubt concerning the Bechora. Different scenarios will be presented, and the focus of the attention in the upcoming sugya will be an issue of a twin birth when two males emerge. What happens in such a case? As we know, a firstborn is given to the Kohen. What happens if the first birth of this particular animal is a twin birth? Will you end up giving both to the Kohen? The Mishnah. Rochel shelo bichra v'yoldo shnei zechorim. A sheep that has not born any children yet, and upon its first birth, two males emerge. V'yotsu shnei roshem kachas. The two heads, the emergence of a head is that which constitutes the birth, the two heads emerged at once, together. Rabbi Yosi Haglili Omer Shnehem L'Kohen. Both are presented to the Kohen. Shnemar Hazichorim L'Hashem. In this pasuk, which deals with firstborn, you see the word Hazichorim in the plural, which indicates that a Bechora fulfillment can take place, in fact, with two animals. B'chachomim Omrim E.F. Shulitzamtsem. It's impossible for two to have merged literally simultaneously. Elo echod loy vechod l'kohen. Rather, one is given to the Kohen, and one is kept by the owner. Namely, the one that didn't come out exactly first, it's considered a non-bechor, and hence the owner keeps it. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, HaKohen Borer Lo Es Hayofer. The Kohen, who receives one of them, will choose the better one. We should point out that Rabbi Tarfon and now Rabbi Akiva that follows are explanations or approaches that would follow from the approach of the Chachamim. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Mishamnin Beinehem, Vasheni Yireh Ad Shiyistoev. Now, the word Mishamnin is going to be the subject of a discussion in the Gemara. Rashi here says, Mishamnimehem, Meforish B'Gemara, Dekoye Noitel Kochush. Even though we have to leave ourselves open-minded for the Gemara later on, nevertheless, for the time being, we're going to explain Mishamnin according to really the maskona of the Gemara. This is really the final position of the Gemara after it undergoes a discussion. But Rashi already reveals the end of the story by telling us that the word Mishamnin comes from the word Shumon, or fat, or choicest. So Rabbi Kiva says Mishamnin Beinehem, in effect, tells me that the owner will keep the better of them. Vahasheni Yireh Ad Shiyistoev. The Sheni, in this case, after the Kohen takes the Kochush, the leaner of the two, the Sheni, the one that remains by the Israel, will graze until it develops a blemish, a mum. We ought to learn the Rashi together on this point mentioned by Rabbi Akiva. Vahasheni, Rashi says, Shenishar li Yisrael, the fatter one that remains by the Yisrael, Yirat Shiyistoev, it will graze until it develops a blemish, V'achakach Yoychal, and then he will eat it. The Sofek Bechor Hu, it becomes an issue of a Sofek Bechor, a doubtful Bechor. Hilkach Eino Nishchat Tomim, it cannot be slaughtered in an unblemished way, because as an unblemished animal, it is a suffix, it's a doubtful sacrifice, and we can't take a chance, so we have to wait till it develops a mum. Uba oisa shel kohen, the one that the kohen takes, lo itzterich lemeimar, there we don't have to tell you that which is obvious, devadai eino nishchat ad shiyei boi mum, that's obvious that you don't slaughter until it develops a blemish. Devizman hazeh, nowadays without a beis hamikdash, mairi. We're talking about nowadays when all Bechoros, you can't do anything with it until it develops a blemish. Inami, another approach is Bizman Abayis Mairi. We're talking about the Zman of the Beis HaMikdash. Udekoyen, that which the Kohen takes, L'chozilak Rava, isn't fit for offering, the Sofek Bechorhu, and it happens to be an issue of doubt concerning whether it's a real Bechor. V'ikol L'mechash Mishum Chulin Bazora. And since there's a doubt, if he were to bring it, it would be viewed as the mundane in the Azar, which is something that's prohibited. So too, therefore, the animal that the Kohen takes, also, we shall wait till it develops a blemish, even though we're talking about the Zman of the Beis HaMikdash. The high denokat shall Yisrael Yirat Shistoev, the Mishnah, which seems to emphasize that the one that the Yisrael takes shall graze till it develops a mum, mishum deboi lemeimar, because there is a need to teach the chayev b'matonis, gabi Yisrael, that that very animal will be obligated in the matonis, which is the section, the limbs from an animal, from a chulin animal that are given as a tithe to the Kohen. They are the zroah l'chayev akeva. Dilu Kohen Potter Minamatonis Ligamri. Kohanim are exempt from tithing the matonas. They are themselves kohanim, hence there is no need for this. However, the main point, and that's what Rashi says here, is that the not only does the animal kept by the owner have to graze till it gets a mum, the animal taken by the kohen also will be subjected to that treatment. The Mishnah continues, v'chayov b'matonas, the animal that the Yisrael keeps will be obligated in the matonas tithe. Rabbi Yossi poter. Rabbi Yossi says there is exemption. Rashi points out that this will meforish b'gemara. This will be explained in the Gemara. Meis echad mehem, one of the two animals that we opened up our Mishnah with, one of them died. Rabbi Tarfon oimer, so if one died, what do you do with the remaining one? So Rabbi Tarfon says, Yachloku, the Yisrael and the Kohen will split it. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Hamotzi Mechaveroi Olov Haraya. The Kohen who wants to get this animal, he will have to bring proof that it is the firstborn. Another case, Zachar Unekeva, if the first birth was a male and female twin birth, so ein kan l'kohen klum, the kohen will get nothing because of the possibility that the first one to emerge was the female. Rashi points out that in this case, even Rabbi Tarfon will agree that the kohen will get nothing. It was simply in the case where there were two males that emerged. It's there that Rabbi Tarfon maintained his position, because in that case one of them was definitely due to the Kohen. However, in this case the Kohen doesn't have that same strength of claim, because you can't say in a case of a male and female birth that one is definitely a Bechor. Before continuing with the Gemara, we should have noted earlier the markings of the crown form that you see in this Mishnah on Daf Yud Zayin, Omen Aleph at the bottom, the third, fourth line from the bottom. You see Shnei Zechorim highlighted, because up till from the beginning of the Mishnah, the focus is on a twin male birth. And finally, here at the end of the Mishnah, we have a new case, namely a twin birth involving male and female. We should also note, before beginning the Gemara, topic headings in the outside margin. You can see we have a nosei klali, means a general topic, called efshur letzamtzem, the possibility of things being exact. Tzimtzum has to do with exactness. The nosei, the immediate topic, is efshur letzamtzem, the issue concerning this ability of being exact. Haim bidei odom efshur letzamtzem. Is it possible that with regard to things that are under human control or human evaluation, can we achieve exactness? As you skim ahead in the Gemara, you will notice triangles that appear, and they appear in two differing directions. With the majority of the triangles that appear will be with their point facing up. They represent, as we have included on the side, Nisyonos Lomar, these are attempts to say Efsher Letzamtzem Bidei Adam, that there is a possibility of being exact when it comes to things measured or evaluated by human beings. With the triangle flipped over, that will represent E. Efsher Letzamtzem. we'll also notice Eivshar, meaning it's impossible to evaluate, evaluate exactness. We'll also notice double underlines. These represent rejections of whatever was being attempted. So our Gemara begins. Amri Debei Rabbi Yanai. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai, it was taught L'Rabbi Yossi Aglili Sham Inon Lei. From Rabbi Yossi Aglili, we conclude, now it's Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, that both are given to the Kohen, both in the twin male birth are given to the Kohen. We conclude the Omar Efshar Litzamtzein Bidei Shomayim. The Kol Shekein Bidei Odom. There can be a situation of exactness that takes place as a result of natural events, for example, birth, even though the natural event is taking place without any attempt to be exact. So that in a situation where there is no attempt to be exact, and yet Rabbi Yossi Aglili says exactness is achieved, exactness meaning simultaneous birth, the kol shekein bidei adam. And certainly when it's an issue involving human involvement, bidei adam. Because in a case of bidei adam, there may be an attempt to be exact. Rabbonon, bidei shomayim yefshel etzamtzein, bidei adam mai. Now as far as the sheet of the Rabbonon, whom we saw took a stand with regarding to the twin male birth, they're saying that you don't give both to the Kohen. Hence, something that's bidei shamayim, meaning something happening through natural events, there is no exactness. What about bidei adam? So our focus is on the shitas rabbonon regarding possibility of exactness when there is human involvement. Toshma, we have a Tanaic source which deals with the sprinkling of sacrificial blood on the Mizbeach. The altar, the Mizbeach, had a red line positioned running around the perimeter or the circumference of the Mizbeach at its midpoint. The reason for this was to distinguish or serve as a mark of distinction between the upper half and the lower half of the Mizbeach. The need for such a distinction has relevance with regard to different types of sacrifices. Some sacrificial blood must be applied to the upper half of the Mizbeach. In other cases, sacrificial blood is applied to the lower half of the Mizbeach. So in order for there to be a clear point of distinction, a line is drawn around the side of the Mizbeach at the midpoint in the Mizbeach's height. So the source says, Chut shel sikra chogroi be'emtza, a line of red girds the Mizbeach or surrounds the Mizbeach at its midpoint, lahavdil, to serve as a point of distinction, bein domim ha'elyonim uvein domim hatachtonim, between blood that must be applied elyonim in the upper part versus blood applied that needs to be applied on the lower part of the mizbeach. Now, v'i amris, if you were to say eifshar letzamtzein bidei adam, that when a person, a human being, is involved in we'll say calculations or attempts to be exact, that it's impossible to achieve exactness. Well, so what have I accomplished here? If I draw a line around what is thought to be the midpoint of the Mizbeach, maybe it's not exactly the midpoint. Let us say he makes it slightly higher, unwittingly. Then you know what's going to happen? Zimnin dekol yohiv el yoinim lemato v'tachtoinim lemalo. Using our example, if the red line is drawn around the midpoint, but it can't be exact, then maybe it's a little bit higher. And then the blood is applied under that line. Application under that line really is not on the lower half of the Mizbeach, because the line was made a bit above the midpoint. Hence, right under the line, you're still at what's called the upper half. And if I'm going to apply Domim HaTachtonim at that point, Domim HaTachtonim means blood that should be at the lower part of the Mizbeach, it's going onto the wrong point. The Gemara answers that we will tell you, you really cannot be exact. So then you still will ask, then how does this line accomplish anything? De marvich ba porta. It's not a thin, a very thin red line. It's a type of, we'll call it a belt, or something, a line that has width to it. So that if it's not a very fine line, but a wide strip of red going around the Mizbeach, so there, that will cover the half, exact half point, plus a little above and a little below. In other words, the margin of error is taken into consideration. Therefore, if I apply blood above this band of red, so then I can say I am definitely in the upper half, because the band of red that runs around the Mizbeach will take into consideration the margin of error. So above that, I am in a margin of certainty. And likewise, below that band of red running around the Mizbeach. Toshma, once again, an attempt to show that you could be exact. And the attempt is Mimidas Kelim and Mimidas Mizbeach. The Torah, in instructing the making of temple Beis HaMikdash utensils and the altar in the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah ordains, dictates dimensions, height and width. If that be the case, so it must be that there is an expectation of things being in accordance with those regulations. In other words, exactness. The Gemara rejects. Shiny Hossam, this is really different. It's really not the case. The Rachmona Omar, the Torah, instructs or says, Ovid uvechol hechi demotzis lemevad nichole. You just make the utensils and the altar. Try to do it according to these dimensions. But even if it doesn't come out exact, it's still acceptable. The next few words are in effect a pasuk. Rashi points out that this the appearance of this pasuk at this point in the Gemara is unnecessary, or as Rashi says, "Velo garsinon lehocha." Hence, you see an angular parenthesis or brackets indicating that we're not going to include this in our reading. Omar Rav Katina. Notice the triangle flips over so that at this point, the attempt will be, and here you will see actually in the source itself, e'efshar l'tzamtzem, that exactness cannot be achieved bidei odom. A little word of introduction, though, the source deals with a earthenware vessel known as a tanur, a stove, an oven, that's a cylindrical item, and having height to it. In the bottom of this cylindrical item, coals would be placed, and heat would become intense there, and it could be then used for baking and cooking. If the tanur absorbed ritual impurity, became tome, then, being that it's earthenware, it can't be immersed in a mikveh. There's no way to metire it unless it experiences being broken. If it's broken into two, and they appear to be of the same size, so that will be the topic featured in this particular source. The underlying point here is that for achieving a tara, this thing must be broken. Now the source says, Cholkoi lishnayim, if he broke the tanor into two halves, vehein shovin, and they appear to be the same in size, Shnehem Tamein. Both are going to be Tomei. Now, part of this rule is that when breaking the item, if you have a if Rove is broken, in other words, you're left with a minority of the original, so then it will achieve Tara. However, if the majority of the original remains, that will still be Tomei. In this case, we split it into two halves. They appear to be the same in size. The source rules that both are Tomei, Lefisha E, Efsher, Letzamtzem. And here you notice we've dashed, underlined E, Efsher. It says, in this source, it's impossible to be exact. And as a result of that, we have to suspect that each supposed half really has in it a majority of original Tanur material. Since we can't be exact, and we can't say that neither one is a majority, we suspect both, and hence you don't achieve purification or Tara through this. And all of this is a function of E. Efsher Litzamtse. And this is something that is part of human involvement. Omar Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says, from here we can't conclude a general approach of E. Efsher Litzamtse. Shiny Klecheres. Earthenware vessels are different. Hoyol V'yesh Boy Gumos. Looking at Rashi, it's not a smooth break. It's not something that can be split in half in a smooth, even fashion. When you break it, it becomes jagged edged. Well, as a jagged-edged item, some at the point of break, some are jutting out more, some are set in more. And therefore, it's v'hilkoch i'efshur l'shayer oison blitos. It's impossible to judge and to measure exactly all of the protrusions of in the case of the break, so that if you broke something like this, the earthenware vessel, and they have two parts that appear to be equal in size, we have to suspect that each one is actually the majority, simply because I can't measure it because of this jagged factor. However, there is room yet to say that something that would break in a smooth, even break, if one attempts to be exact, he could achieve exactness. But since here we're dealing with earthenware, and you can't make, unless maybe you use a laser device in cutting it, and we can be fairly confident that Gemara was not making reference to the use of a laser device in breaking it, but rather a hammer or smashing it by dropping it, there you won't be able to achieve an even break. But that doesn't shed light in general on the possibility or impossibility of achieving exactness. Bidei Odom. Toshma. Well, we continue in our pursuit of can exactness be achieved, according to the Rabbonon, Bidei Odom. The topic that we are now going to learn deals with what's called the Eglo Arufa issue. A murder victim is found between two cities. Measuring takes place to determine which city is closer to the corpse, and that city will bring a calf to an area that's uncultivated, and its neck is smashed. This has nothing to do with sacrificial ritual, but rather it's a ceremony that's done to serve as atonement or temporary atonement for the fact that a murder has taken place. This, of course, is until we find who the actual murderer was. But in the meantime, the Eglo Arufa is brought. Let us now read the source and then see how it ties into our issue of exactness. Nimsa mechuvan bein shtei ayoros. A murder victim is found. Mechuvan would mean seeming exactly between two cities. Shtehen mevios shtei eglois. The two cities bring two calves. Namely, between the two cities, each city bringing a calf, two calves are brought. Divrei Rebbe Eliezer. My time, why are two brought? Lav mishum dekosavar, is it not because this is of the opinion, bidei adam efshir litzansem, that when there is human involvement, here we're talking about measuring, when human beings measure, and when a corpse is found, we have it positioned, it might have been in fact positioned exactly between two cities, and our measuring will be an exact measuring. The issue of bidei adam is explained by the Rabbeinu Gershom at the bottom line, where he says de medida havya bidei adam de korov lishnehem b'shaveh. The measuring that takes place is something that people do, and we can reveal its positioning to be exactly between the two cities. And as far as psukim are concerned, the Gemara points out ukroiva. The word krova appears in the pasuk where it says voyir asher kroiva lachalal, the city closest to the halal. The word krova, though it appears in the singular, meaning this, the one city that's closer, nevertheless there is no limitation in the word, the afilu krovos, and it can refer to a case where even both cities are near it. Namely, both cities are equidistant from the corpse. So this would indicate that when there's human involvement, you can achieve exactness. Loi. The Gemara rejects this. Rather, says Rabbi Eliezer, Sofar lo Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Rabbi Eliezer, who's featured in this Tanaic source, is really from the school of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, D'Amar Efshar Litzamtzem Bidei Shamayim V'Kol Shekein Bidei Adam. That exactness is achieved even through natural events, all the more so when you have human beings involved who are intentionally trying to achieve exactness. The Gemara that continues from this point will pick up on the issue of Efshar Litzamtzem and raise the question of maybe this is a Tanaic controversy. But as far as our shiur is concerned, with this we conclude for today.